Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to On the Ball with Rick Bucher. Here's your host.
Might send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
This is On the Ball on the United WeCast Network, and I am Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1, hear me on Fox Sports Radio, and you can read me on the Fox Sports app and at foxsports.com. You can also follow me on X, the former Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Rick Bucher. I'm a lot of places, but there's only one place you can hear me talking about story angles and perspectives that you are not likely to find anywhere else, primarily, but not exclusively, involving the NBA, and that is here. I may have told you when the Phoenix Suns traded for Kevin Durant that I wasn't convinced that they had moved closer to winning a championship. I'm pretty sure I told you last summer that their adoption of the Big Three model by adding Bradley Beal wasn't going to work because the Big Three model has never really worked. It was a media-concocted trope that equated NBA team building, as in building a championship team, with building championship fantasy league teams. I assuredly told you that if it was going to work, it better be this year because they were locked into huge contracts with KD, Beal, and Devin Booker to the tune of $50 million or so each, and had dealt the vast majority of their upcoming draft picks in order to acquire KD and Beal. So why am I now saying the situation in Phoenix isn't as dire as everybody is making it out to be in the minutes following the Minnesota Timberwolves sweep of the Suns in the first round? There's two reasons. I'm working off of different, more reasonable expectations, and I am not at all wed to keeping the three of them together. In fact, the Suns can't. Not if they hope to be better next season, which should be the goal, right? This wasn't an issue of not enough time together. Anyone who thinks that they just need a second year to work out the kinks is oblivious to their history. It's not that KD, Beal, and Booker were all healthier this season than they have been in years, although they were. Developing elite chemistry can take more than one season, especially when the coach is brand new to the scene as well, which Frank Vogel was. It's that they never showed us a glimpse of something truly elite, ever, this season. There was never a stretch where I thought, okay, if they could sustain this or capture it at the right time, they might have something. And this is a Phoenix team that actually beat Denver and Minnesota every time they played them this season. So the potential was there. They just never demonstrated that they were capable of sustaining it. The Clippers gave us more reason to make that leap of faith than the Suns ever did. The Clippers were fourth in offensive rating and had a stretch where they went 26-5. And for all of the Suns' firepower, they were barely in the top 10. They were ninth in offensive rating, and they were 13th in defense, even though Frank Vogel is at least supposed to be a defensive guru. But that was in part their 13th ranking in defense was as high as it was, in part because they were 15th in pace and 14th in strength of schedule. If you tamp down the tempo, it usually makes your defense look better. And to be 14th in strength of schedule in the Western Conference means that you played one of the easier schedules, because the schedules were truly, truly, truly soft in the Eastern Conference. The Bucks sort of did the same thing when Doc Rivers took over as far as the defense is concerned. Everyone went bananas about how Doc had fixed their defense. He didn't, really. He just made their defense look statistically better by slowing the tempo. They were no more capable of stopping opponents when it mattered than they were under Adrian Griffin. It was the same personnel. We just played a slightly different way, but it wasn't enough to make them a better defensive team overall, as their record under Doc reflected. The Suns and Bucks actually had a lot in common this year. The names were bigger than their games, and a run or two convinced some people that they were capable of doing something. The Bucks won 7 in a row under Griffin in December, and then they won 6 in a row under Doc at a time that sort of bridged February and March. Likewise, the Suns had a 7-game winning streak in November and then won 6 in a row in January. But after that, Phoenix just bumped along the rest of the way, winning 3, losing 2, winning 1, losing 2, so on. They didn't grow or develop any sort of momentum as the season unfolded. They actually backed into the 6th seed. They could have easily been a play-in team, and who knows what would have happened there. They backed into the 6th seed, essentially thanks to New Orleans slipping and the Lakers, Kings, and Warriors either coming from too far off the pace or simply not closing with a strong enough flourish. All of which is why they aren't serious about taking a step forward unless they deal at least one of their 3 stars. And there's one in particular that has to go. And if he goes, then I don't know that you have to deal the other 2. And that's Devin Booker. Now, I am not blaming Booker for Phoenix's shortcomings this year. I don't see him as getting in the way as much as not being the guy to lead them there. He is in the prime of his career. He has played 9 seasons now, all with Phoenix, since they took him with the 13th pick, a terrific find by the Suns. He has, without question, exceeded expectations, at least of a 13th pick who came off the bench in his 1 year with Kentucky, averaging 10 points, 2 rebounds, and 1 assist while playing 20 minutes. But he is not the cornerstone of a championship contender. His first 5 seasons, he didn't make the playoffs. And yeah, I know those rosters weren't great. Still, if you are a cornerstone player, you're competing for a playoff spot, if not making it. It's what Kevin Garnett did with not a whole lot around him in Minnesota. It's what Anthony Davis actually didn't compete for one. Derrick Rose did it in Chicago. You look at the rosters that were around him. If you're in that category, and maybe I'm giving Devin Booker too much, but if you are a franchise player, if you are a number one, then you don't need a whole lot in order to compete for a playoff spot. And Booker simply never did. Then Chris Paul came to town, and suddenly they went to the playoffs 3 years in a row. Chris Paul being that kind of guy. And they won at least one round all 3 years. Paul leaves town, KD and Beal arrive, and they make the playoffs but fail to win a game. If you're a cornerstone player and you have KD, you win at least a game in that series. Now, Booker is a great individual talent, one of the best shooters in the league today, no questions. But there's a lot more that goes into being the leader of a team that plays for titles. You have to make others better. You make the game easier for them, and you win games. And can we really say that for Booker? The 3 biggest scoring games of his career, 70 points, 62 points, 59, were all losses. The 70-pointer by double digits, the 59 in a 33-point blowout prior to Paul's arrival. Half of his top 10 career scoring performances came in losses. The picture all that paints is that Booker can be sensational, but he doesn't really affect winning and losing, or at least his performance doesn't, which is what a cornerstone worth building around does. The problem with not moving Booker is that he is never going to stop thinking of himself as the cornerstone, not in Phoenix. It's what he's been for 9 seasons. The fans are going to think the same. It would have been like asking Damian Lillard to step to the side in Portland. Booker also, and this is perhaps the most important part, has far and away the most value. He is 27 years old, in the absolute prime of his career. It's very easy to justify paying him between $50 million and $60 million a year over the next 4 years. And you also know you have him for 4 years locked up. The Suns traded 5 first-round picks, Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges for Durant at age 34. The Minnesota Timberwolves acquired Rudy Gobert from the Utah Jazz for 5 first-round picks and 5 players, including Jared Vanderbilt and Walker Kessler. It's not at all unreasonable to think that Phoenix could get, at the very least, 3 first-round picks and 3 quality young players for Booker. Kevin Durant, conversely, has 2 years left on his deal for roughly $100 million. He will be 36 years old next season. He was really efficient this year and at times really good defensively. He still has market value. He wasn't peak KD, but he was remarkable for being 35 and with his injury history. His 75 games in the regular season were the most he's played since he tore his Achilles 5 years ago. But exactly how much would you be willing to give up for a 2-year rental? Not as much as for 4 years of Booker in his prime. That's for sure. Now, I've raised this idea with various GMs and scouts for a piece that I'm going to write for FoxSports.com on the subject. And one of the issues they brought up is that if the Suns move Booker, then KD may ask to be traded. And yes, I understand that. But that's not going to stop me from looking to move Booker, even if it means I have to move KD. It's not something I want to do, but as I see it, this is a remodeling job on a house that I have to live in while I do the work. Deconstruction or demolition are necessary, but I'm going to be surgical about it. What pieces stay and which ones I keep are fungible. I have a top-heavy team. That's the bottom line. Right now, I have a top-heavy team with little means to improve, and I need to change that. Moving Booker gives me the most new, raw material. It would be nice to keep KD as a central beam for the next 2 years, especially since I can't move Beal, but it's not essential. If I came back next season with a Beal-centric team, I'm sure to get roasted for having turned my franchise into the Washington Wizards.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
But I could live with the roasting if Booker and KD got me the players and assets I need to build a better team. I'm not building this around Beal. He's just a placeholder. And I would think that if I'm moving Booker and KD, I'm getting a pretty nice set of assets and pieces to start over with. And besides, the moves that were popular with the fans and media are what the Suns, they're what got the Suns where they are right now. So worrying about my popularity isn't going to be my first concern. Beal, like KD, has 2 years left on his deal, plus a player option for a third, plus a no trade clause. And he's making between 50 and 57 mil per through those final 2-3 years. He is easily the most difficult to move because there's nothing about what he did this past season that would suggest that he's worth 50 million plus. Of the three, he was the least available, playing 53 games. He shot the ball as well as he ever has, above 50% overall, and a sizzling 43% from three. but I'm going to attribute at least some of that to the fact that he was drawing the third best defender on most nights, something that he's never enjoyed before, which is why his numbers may have bumped up, at least percentage-wise. And he averaged the fewest points per game, 18, that he has in the last eight seasons. He's useful. He's just not $50 million useful. Averaging 18 points in today's offensive catering league is third option on a mediocre team stuff. D'Angelo Russell, Klay Thompson, Colin Sexton, they all averaged around 18 points per game this season. None of them making 50 mil. All played for mediocre teams. The bottom line is, you'd have to give, not get, a first-round pick to convince someone to take Beal and his salary. A pick that, as a Phoenix Sun, I do not currently have. But if Booker is elsewhere, that changes Beal's usefulness. He's essentially an older version of Booker. So if Book is elsewhere, now Beal gets 20 shots a game or more, instead of the 14 per he had this year. Now he steps into the number two role, which is far more familiar to him. You put a legit point guard next to him, and ideally he's playing alongside KD, and you get some defensive wings, get some toughness inside, like there's a number of guys out there, Mitchell Robinson from the Knicks being one. I could easily see Beal flirt with averaging close to 30 a game, as he did several years in Washington. The problem against the Timberwolves, the last that we saw of him, is that he was asked to perform duties against the league's best defense that he's not particularly good at. He's a scorer. He shot 44% overall and 43% on threes. He shot the ball okay. It was the rest of his game that gave us the impression that he didn't have a good series, which he did not. But he was asked to defend Anthony Edwards, which got him into foul trouble the last two games. And he was asked to be a playmaker slash ball handler, resulting in 18 assists and 13 turnovers. None of that is playing to his strengths or putting him in a position to succeed. It was essentially, you weren't going to ask Devin or KD to guard Anthony Edwards. He got the short end of the stick. And it underscored that they didn't have any defensive wings on the roster. That's the other part here. Expectations have to be tempered. I don't know when we got into the habit of thinking that every team is trying to win a championship every year. And if they're not, they are failing or falling short. The fact is, there are probably a half dozen teams every year that have their eye on potentially winning a ring. The 24 others are looking to A, make money, B, save money, C, provide an entertaining product for their fans that leaves open the possibility of or hints at one day competing for a championship, and D, make more money. As constituted, the Suns were not a championship contender, nor even accomplishing A, B, C, or D. And while new owner Matt Ishbia might have a lot of money and appear to have no concerns about spending it, I've seen countless new owners get flushed with the giddy excitement of owning a team for the first time. They're going to spare no expense to raise a banner and have a parade as soon as possible. That, after all, being the kind of public adoration that they couldn't get in the ventures that earned them the coin to buy a team in the first place, and then see that banner raised or not, they come to terms with the discovery that they can't simply buy their way to a championship, or if they happen to have the money and the institutional knowledge, the requisite GM and coach to actually win one, make good on their investment, they realize it gets really, really expensive to keep winning them, and they default to their better business senses and dial it back. You saw it happen with Mark Cuban. I believe we're going to see it with Stan Kroenke and the Denver Nuggets. You didn't see it with the Golden State Warriors as much because they got lucky and they had a team that wasn't that expensive when they began their dynasty run, because Steph Curry and Klay Thompson weren't what they ultimately became. Same with Draymond Green. Now, I first floated the idea that the Suns should look to deal Booker several days ago, and about 24 hours or so later, we got the first rumor being floated that Devin was interested in going to the Knicks, followed by another rumor that the Knicks would love to pair Booker in the backcourt with Jalen Brunson, which is not a bad idea at all. Far better than going after Donovan Mitchell, I'd say, even though Mitchell has long wanted to go there, and there's been innuendo forever about Donovan, a New York City kid, going home. And I'd give Mitchell the edge as far as being the driving force behind a team's playoff success. He's demonstrated that he can be that kind of guy, as opposed to Booker. But I don't need Mitchell's leadership in that way because I have Brunson. And whether the average fan is aware of it or not, Booker is significantly bigger than Mitchell. He's listed as 6'6", versus Mitchell being 6'3". They probably weigh about the same. But Devin is much longer and taller. And with Brunson being a stocky 6'2", I'd prefer to have a bigger two-guard next to him, in much the same way the 6'2 Stephen Curry benefited from having a 6'6 Klay Thompson next to him. Booker also strikes me as being a far better catch-and-shoot threat than Mitchell is, and that's what I want. I don't want Booker having to dominate the ball. I still want the ball in Jalen's hands. I don't know if that happens with Donovan Mitchell. In the same way, they're still trying to figure out with Donovan and Darius Garland, and for my money, I'd rather have the ball in Darius Garland's hands, but Donovan Mitchell is not as effective when he doesn't have the ball. I'm also leery when a large part of a player's motivation to go to a team is that it's home or it's where he grew up. And that's the case with Donovan. Being surrounded by friends and family can be a comfort, no doubt, but it can also be a massive distraction. And I've had more players over the years tell me that they'd rather not play where they grew up or where friends and family are than I've had say that that's their dream scenario. It also makes sense as far as what the Knicks could give up without compromising what they are now, which is a dark horse title contender. They have all their own first-round picks for the foreseeable future, as well as protected first-round picks from Milwaukee, Detroit, and Washington that I don't believe are going to be transferred this year because of the protection, which is actually good because it's better to have them in a better draft than this one, which potential trade partners are sure to understand. Mitchell Robinson, Julius Randle, and Miles McBride get me to a match for Booker's $50 million salary. It keeps the Villanova guys, Josh Hart, Dante DiVincenzo, and Jalen Brunson together. And the Knicks can easily spare 3 or 4 first-round picks. I have to imagine there would be a decent bidding war for Booker, which probably would drive up the price as far as picks are concerned. But if the Knicks are truly interested in Booker, and if they blow their current series to the 76ers, I certainly could see them being that, even if they aren't now, even if the rumor's not completely true. And we know Jim Dolan, the owner's history for overpaying for things they really want. Carmelo Anthony. The Suns, then, would be in the position the Nets were in when Ishbia was so thirsty to land KD. It's the, here's my price, take it or leave it position, because I got other people that will buy my goods. And that's a nice position to be in, and it's a much better position than they're in right now. The one other team that could make sense for Booker as a destination and as a trade partner for the Suns are the San Antonio Spurs. Now, I haven't gone through every team and every roster. The Knicks, because of the rumors I mentioned, and then the Spurs just came up because they need to take the next step, and you'd like to pair a great veteran shooter, backcourt player, next to Wembanyama if the Spurs are ready to unleash that beast completely. Now, I don't know if Booker is viewed as a guy who is pound-the-rock Spurs culture guy, but he'd certainly be a nice compliment to Wembanyama, along with whoever the Spurs take in this year's draft. The San Antonio roster and the salaries give me multiple options to get to $50 million. If I'm the Suns and I get Zach Collins, point guard Trey Jones, point guard or power forward, he's listed a bunch of different ways, Jeremy Sochan, and or Keldon Johnson, and or Devin Vassell, and a few first round picks, I'm better than I am now. I've got young guys with potential, a bench, improved defense, and draft assets, none of which I have right now. My general point is that the Suns are not in as dire a position as a lot of people are making it out to be. Yes, the experiment didn't work. We knew that from the beginning. But when you have star players, you still have value, even if those star players don't fit together. There's a lot of money tied up in them, but between Booker and KD, they certainly have some assets or the ability to change the picture in a hurry. As long as we just don't put the stamp on it that it has to be a championship contender ASAP. All right, before I go, I do want to alert my listeners to some new developments with my sponsor, Mizzen & Main, one of my sponsors, which provides just about everything I wear, both on air, on the golf course, or if I'm just rolling around town. If you follow me on social media, you've seen that Mizzen & Main are now making suits, and they've expanded their portfolio of blazers as well. And I figured their suits would be comfortable because I found everything they make to be both extremely comfortable and super easy to care for. But I was surprised at just how comfortable their suits proved to be. I mean, honestly, it feels like workout gear, except you're wearing a suit. I had custom suits made for a number of years, and these suits are every bit as comfortable and form-fitting. The gray fresco suit, which you can see on Instagram, is made of stretchy, lightweight material, and I needed no alterations before I wore it on air. That's crazy. It's a great travel suit because of how light it is, how little space it takes up in a suitcase, and how wrinkle-free it will be if you just hang it up overnight. Use the promo code BUCHER, B-U-C-H-E-R, 3-5, for a discount and get yourself one. I promise you, it will become your go-to suit, whether you're on the road, in the office, or attending a special event. Mizzen & Main, M-I-Z-Z-E-N-A-N-D-M-A-I-N. Find out what you're mizzen and make them your main brand. All right, that was kind of bad. They didn't give that to me. I made that up all myself. But blame me. In the next podcast, so with KD, LeBron, and Steph all out of the playoffs and nearing their end, it raises the question, who's the next face of the league? And is the NBA ready for an international one? And if it isn't, then what? All of that in the next podcast, unless something comes up in these playoffs, as you know, that is more compelling. But we do have to address this face of the league, and what we're seeing is a turning of the page when it comes to the NBA and whether or not it's a good thing and how the league is going to deal with it. All that in the next episode. In the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.